introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he puts
look at this!
Jamal Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And happy days are here again. We are back. We got the full crew. QB1, newly married QB1, all moved in. Miles Gorham, and I guess the world's actingest man, Yinka, all up in here tonight, ready to get back to it. Starting training camp. Football's a week away. We are excited. JR, my man, how you doing? It's been a little while. You got some announcements. Off the field, on the field, all kinds of new stuff going on for you, my man. What's going on? How you doing?
I'm good, man. Just getting back from Jamaica, back to reality. You know, it's hard to come back, all expense paid for, and then you come back to reality, you come back to real life, which is nothing like Jamaica. I had a great time. Wedding was great. Everything went perfect. Just a little update about me. I am the new host of the Locked On Vikings podcast, which is some news that I broke the other day. A couple of episodes are already up right now. So a lot has changed since the last time we recorded.
All right. All right. So now let's see if we can try to keep up here. If you're trying to, you know, get your fix of JR, you can get him on the Purple for the Win podcast every Friday.
Yep.
Inside the Pylon, Locked On podcast at least 3 times a week, maybe more, depending on what's going on. Climbing the Pocket. Occasional writing for us. Anything else that I'm missing in there?
No, nah, that's all.
Okay, for now.
Hopefully no more.
All right. Well, Miles, my man, how you doing? You all settled in now?
Yeah, it's been almost a month. We got a cat.
What?
Like 2 weeks ago. So the house is changing. Life is changing.
What's going on over here, Miles? You collecting pets now?
That was not my choice.
I mean, I figured that much, but you know, I mean, did you balance the cat out with maybe a big screen TV or no?
I'm just here so I don't get fined. So.
All right, we'll move along so Miles doesn't get in any trouble here. And Saxy Prince, my man, how you doing?
Yeah, man, it's good to be back. We haven't had all of us on the pod in quite a bit of time, so it's almost a little unusual to have all these voices on, but. I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well.
Well, what have you been up to, man?
Well, I've been taking I took a class probably about a month ago. It was level one of a certain acting technique, and then I took level two. We had final performances on Tuesday that actually went extremely well. Me and my scene partner acted out a scene from a play called. God, it just escaped my mind. A better way to die. Is it the better way to die? It's escaping me. Right now.
I was gonna say Training Day, but guessing that wasn't it. No.
No, it's not that. It's escaping me right now, but it's a fantastic play.
If it comes back to you, just jump in. Whatever we're talking about, doesn't matter. If we're talking about Pat F. Line, just jump in. Let us know what the name of the play was.
Oh, for sure. All right. Lesson Before Dying, that's what it's called.
Okay, there we go.
There's actually a movie version of it. Don Cheadle plays the main character. Mekhi Phifer is in it. It's pretty all Cicely Tyson's in it. It's a pretty all-star cast. It's a great, great story. It takes place in like the 40s. A lot of stuff happening with that. Yeah, but I walked away from it feeling really good about the rehearsal, as our teacher would like to call it, but it was a lot of fun.
Good stuff. And saw today on the Twitter machine that you and ScarJo will be fighting to play Teddy Bridgewater when the movie comes out in just a little bit. So
yeah. I'm not feeling too good about my chances. I'm not.
All right. Well, let's jump into it because we do have a lot we want to get to today. And I'm gonna start us off with a bit of a rhetorical question, but I'm legitimately interested. And Yank, I'm actually gonna start with you because. You are there. Miles is also there. And then we'll bring it home with JR before we get into the stuff that was on the original show sheet. But when is 38-7 gonna stop triggering our fan base? Because I know that we like to say that, oh my God, the Eagles won't let it go, but they're never gonna let it go if they know it keeps getting a reaction from us. And every time they post it, I see like 15 tweets being like, oh God, here go the Eagles fans again. They're never gonna stop.
I think it'll stop when we get a Super Bowl. I think then we will turn it back on the tables and stuff. But until then, I think we're going to suffer from little brother, little sister syndrome, and we're going to continue to get upset every time it gets brought up because it was a spanking. There was no one who was not to blame for that loss. You know, from coaching staff to players, I think everyone for the most part played poorly, and it was an embarrassing defeat. But until we get another Super Bowl, I don't think people are ever going to not be in their feelings about 38-7.
I think that for me is why it doesn't hurt so bad. Is like, it was just a straight, you know, like you got to check out of that game early, so like the emotional investment wasn't there, like, you know, with a missed field goal at the end of the game or something like that. That's why I don't understand why it still hurts people so much. Like, we just got ruined in that game. Like, Miles, like, yeah. why are people still so hurt by this blowout?
I feel like some people feel hurt just for the fact that, like, at least I haven't seen people doing this to, like, Saints fans, because you know how that, but I also know that if we did that to the Saints fans, they'd turn around and be like, we beat you guys in the NFC Championship back in 09, so yada yada. I don't think it's a big deal. Like, let it go. Like, they're doing the same thing to Patriots fans. So it's not like we're the only fans they're doing this to. They're doing it to the two teams they beat in the most important games of the season. So, I mean, I think we were the favorites at one point going into the NFC Championship game. So
yep.
I could totally understand. They felt like they were underdogs once Carson Wentz got hurt. I can understand that side of it. And then we come back and beat the Saints. We're riding high. You know, we'd won 14 games up to that point. You know, we're one of the best defenses in the league. You know, Case Keenum was playing pretty decent. Wide receivers were balling, and they came in. We went into Philadelphia and they whooped our butts. So it is what it is. Like, you just got to get over it. You got to ignore those people. Like, who cares? Like, if they say it, they say it. Like I said, they're doing the same thing to Patriots fans.
Yep. Anytime someone mentions Tom Brady, you can be assured that an Eagles fan will post a picture of Nick Foles immediately thereafter.
Right. So get over it. Like, it is what it is. It happened. It's done. Like, we just need to win. Like, winning cures all, right? So just go back and win.
Yeah, man. I feel you. JR, what about you, man? What are your thoughts? Is this ever going to stop being a thing? Or, like Yinka said, do we have to win a Super Bowl before people stop feeling so hurt about this?
If fans think it's bad right now, wait until week 5 when we play the Eagles this year. It's going to be even worse because they're going to keep bringing that up because that's the last time the two teams played. And I mean, Vikings fans do the same thing with the Saints, with the Minneapolis Miracle. I know the Vikings didn't win the Super Bowl, but every time the Saints are mentioned, somebody likes to bring up the Minneapolis Miracle. So it's the same thing to me.
Anytime the Packers are mentioned, some Vikings fan jumps in and says something. Like, yeah. I know it's a rivalry, but, like, someone jumps in and says something.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the same exact thing. So 38-7 doesn't really affect me. I moved on the week after, and I'm not sure why it still affects fans for whatever reason.
Okay.
Hell, it was easy to move on during that game. Like,
during the game.
It was like a blowout. Yeah. You know, it was like, once it was a blowout, I was like, okay, I'm going to let this keep playing out, and I'm just going to make me some dinner or something.
Yeah, go figure out what the rest of my weekend is going to look like. You know, what are we doing for food this week? This is done. You know, there's no more attachment. But anywho, let's get into some stuff that we actually are going to have some emotional attachment to, that I think we'll probably be riding some ups and downs and probably reading a little bit too much into things, but it's what we do this time of year. We've been starved for football for a little while, and training camp is here. JR, going into training camp, man, what is your favorite storyline? What's the thing you're going to be watching more closely than anything else?
Yeah, so mine is just the injury situations with Dalvin Cook and Pat Elflein, starting off with Dalvin Cook. He was fully cleared by team doctors for all team-related training camp activities, and you saw that with him not wearing the knee brace during the rookie training or the rookie practice sessions, which is really good for him. And just to see him running around without any limitations, him cutting on that knee is a really good sign. But on the flip side, fans do have the right to panic a little bit about Pat Elflein, because Ben Gessling came out and said that he did have a surgery on his shoulder performed a couple months ago, and that's something that fans did not know about at all. Yes, we knew about the ankle surgery that he did have, that he suffered in the NFC Championship game in January, but we did not know that he had surgery on his shoulder. So that was a bit of a surprise, and a lot of people were coming out and saying today that he did feel a little sore after the first practice today where he was working out on the side field. But that's to be expected because he's trying to get his body back in shape. But on the flip side of all of that, with him being down so long, he hasn't had a chance to get any type of rigorous training or weight training. And one of his biggest flaws as a rookie was his strength. And he's not been able to work on improving that strength because he's had all these surgical procedures being done. So Dalvin Cook is obviously, he looks like he's moving around really good, but fans do have the right to panic about Pat Elflein at this point.
Yeah, and I guess from your perspective, and this is one of the things I know Miles and I had a bit of a conversation about, but like, what would he be working on right now? Like, if he was healthy, what would be the things that he would have been doing to help himself get better? Because it seems amongst Vikings Twitter, we think Pat Elflein was really, really good. Obviously, he was a big part of our screen game and things like that. But I mean, Bleacher Report ranked him 21st of centers. PFF had him at 31st in terms of grade. So, I mean, he wasn't great last year. We were expecting him to be better. What things would he be working on in the offseason that he probably isn't able to do other than just lifting weights?
It's just tough with him because the biggest thing that he struggled with, like I alluded to earlier, was the strength factor with him. And what you saw a lot of times with him was that he was so inconsistent with sustaining blocks. And what you saw a lot of times was that he would engage with those defenders at the point of attack, but they would easily shed him because he just didn't have the strength to stick on those blocks. And you saw it with even in the championship game with Fletcher Cox and throughout the year as well, guys like Mike Daniels, and the list goes on and on. And that's one of the biggest things that he severely needs to work on, but he just couldn't because he's been down for so long. You can't lift weights with that bum shoulder and that bum ankle. It's like he couldn't do upper body or lower body because he sustained injuries in his upper and lower body. So I really don't know, honestly, what he could do because he sustained injuries at multiple parts of his body. So I'm not really sure exactly what he's been doing. And I'm sure Eric Sugarman's had some type of exercises and some type of training that he could do while he was down, but there's just nothing that you can do to replace that free weight training.
And is that something that you can really get back in season? Like, once things really get going, do guys have enough time with like recovery and film and everything else that they're doing during the season? Is that something that you can really work on to build your strength during the season? Or is it pretty much if it's not done in the off season, then you got to wait till the next one?
It just depends on the type of weight training program and regimen that they're in. And there's not a lot of programs that, that ask those players to lift heavy weights in season. It's more of maintaining what you've put on during the offseason. Nobody's really trying to build muscle. It's more of sustaining what you already have built during the offseason. So I don't know how he's going to get back to that level that he was at prior to the surgery procedure. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does rebound this year and if he ever does get back that strength and if he can get better at sustaining that strength and getting better at his technique at sustaining those blocks.
And a last Elflein question, I guess, for you, given that you're saying strength is the most important thing for him, for you, would it be, do you think it'd be more beneficial for him to get healthy, get in the weight room for a little bit? Or at this point, is it just get healthy, get on the field, start getting reps?
It's get healthy, get on the field, because you're not going to build muscle at this point, because in order to build muscle, you're going to have to lift an extraneous amount of weights in order to continue and build up even more from where he was previously. And he's really starting back from ground zero from where he was as a rookie, because he's still rehabbing at this point. And we don't know if he's going to be able to gain back that previous strength that he had before. So he's starting all the way back over, essentially. And I don't know. It's going to be an interesting situation. I really don't know what to tell you, honestly, because I don't know what his strength level is right now and how far along he is from both of those injuries right now. So I think it's best if he just gets healthy and gets out there, as opposed to sitting out trying to gain his strength back and then getting back out there. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, moving along, I know we're going to have a bit of a similar topic, but Miles, I guess for you, when you're looking at things here, training camp, favorite storylines, things you're going to be watching more than anything else, what is it for you?
Yeah, I think definitely you guys touch on it with Elflein and everything. It's got to start with the offensive line. just with, you know, I know a lot of the way fans treated, you know, the offseason in terms of, you know, not in free agency, they didn't spend big on an offensive lineman in the draft. They didn't take one in the first round, and a lot of the top tier guys didn't fall to them in the second round. So they ended up taking Brian O'Neill, who's a little bit of a project. So I'm really curious to see how everything's going to come into fold, just because, especially with Elflein's injury, it means Nick Easton's going to have to start at center, and he's going to play out of position. I know he played center previously, but I just don't think that's his like functional best position. I think he's better off as a guard, but he'll have to play center for now. And basically, Elflein's, you know, return table timetable is really the important key here, because the sooner he can get back, the sooner they can get everybody into their desired positions. And then obviously you look at the right tackle position with Rashad Hill. Can he make that jump, you know, going from being a part-time player last year to a full-time starter this year? Can he make that jump and not be a liability at right tackle and, you know, be left on an island at times? Because I know there are some flashes there, definitely, that he can play and be a starter, but he needs that consistency, definitely needs to be there. So I'd say offensive line for sure on the offensive side of the ball. And then on the defensive side of the ball for me, it would be the backup linebacker position, just because I feel like you really have your three guys in Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, and Ben Gideon. And Ben Gideon's really only a part-time player. Who do you have behind those guys? You know, you have guys like Eric Wilson, Kendrell Brothers, who's suspended for the first four games. They drafted Devontae Downs in the seventh round. And then they have some other guys that they brought in, you know, through practice squad or guys they've previously drafted. But they don't really have much there for in terms of depth or proven depth. And I think a guy like Kentrell Brothers really being getting suspended is really a key opportunity for somebody else to step up. But at the same time, it kind of hurts some of that depth, because you have guys that really are unproven, and I'm not sure what they're going to do and how they're going to handle that. So I think there's a lot of spots up for grabs, but I mean, I'd be really scary if, you know, Eric Kendricks or Anthony Barr went down for a long period of time, because who do you have to fill those positions? I think Ben Gideon could fill in for a guy like Eric Kendricks a little bit if you needed him to, but obviously he's not going to play up to that level. But I don't know where you'd replace, you know, those two guys. They're so key to this defense.
All right. That's fair. And I mean, I guess that's what it is, though. You become a good team, you got to start paying people. Now it's really about those, drafting well, hoping we have some people to fill into some of those slots, because, we can't pay them all. And some of these unproven guys are going to need to step up. And I know this is weird that this next one here is coming from Saxy Prince and not from Miles. But Prince, what's your favorite storyline heading into camp?
My favorite storyline is actually centered around the wide receivers, is more specifically that wide receiver three position. For those who are team don't pay Diggs because of injury history, or don't pay Diggs because he doesn't have 1,000 yards, I think they should just be just as invested in who's going to be that wide receiver three, because if that's the case, if Diggs is injury prone, we need to look at who's going to be the next guy that could potentially step up. And if Diggs has to miss one or two games, maybe even three games this season, who's going to be able to kind of share that load? Now, obviously, you can, you know, delegate some of that to Kyle Rudolph and Dalvin Cook and, you know, Latavius Murray. But we really need that consistent third weapon, whether it be a guy who can consistently kind of trade off with Thielen and Diggs in the slot, play on the outside, really win his one-on-one matches when Thielen and Diggs are, you know, kind of pulling coverage away from a certain side of the field, whatever the case is. I am looking at a guy like Laquon Treadwell. 2016, I believe it was. Was it 2016? Yeah, it was 2016. I can't remember. But anyways, I was definitely one of the guys who 2016. Okay. I was definitely one of those guys who were kind of quite high on Laquon Treadwell. And, to date, he has disappointed a little bit.
I'm sorry,
but
what bit?
Okay. I'm not trying to speak completely hyperbolically, Jason.
I mean, a little bit was pretty hyperbolic, though.
So anyways, Yeah, I am looking to see him definitely take a step forward. It looks like, you know, a lot of the things are starting to fall in place where he could really be that wide receiver three. Not that that's that big a deal, but I definitely think that he could be that wide receiver three. So I'm really going to be watching how he's developing in training camp, as well as, you know, really spots 4 through 6 as well, too. I mean, those guys, I don't know for sure that we have any guy that I'm comfortable saying this guy's the for sure number, you know, 4, 5, or 6. You know, I think we're hoping Kendall Hunt, Kendall Wright can step in, you know, potentially even push Treadwell to be that number 3. But if not, you know, number 4, and who are those 5 and 6 guy? One thing I am a little concerned with, and I'm not trying to put bad karma on it, is injuries. And I really don't know who I can trust after Thielen and Diggs. So that's where my attention is going to be focused in training camp.
Yeah, that also makes sense. And there's a lot of that outside of JR. Really, it's, I mean, even with JR a little bit there, it's depth and more depth and seeing, you know, beyond the guys who we know who's going to step up and fill those slots, because we have a lot of questions. And I think that's really the thing that I know that oftentimes we'll see rankings and the Vikings coming off a 3-13 season aren't ranked as highly as maybe a lot of folks think we should be. But I think the questions you guys are bringing up right now really speak to why. Like, we have a lot of unproven guys that are going to need to step up and play well. And with them being unknowns and us knowing that football is a violent sport where people get hurt, that's kind of the thing that has people wondering what's going to happen to us if anyone does get nicked up on this team. All right. We're going to keep this thing moving along here. Training camp, rookies. If you haven't done it already, I feel like if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably already listened to both episodes of Locked On. Locked On Vikings with JR. But if you haven't yet, make sure you go ahead and do that, because JR is doing great work. One of the things he did on Locked On was go through all the rookies again, give you a bit of a reminder. I know it's been a little while since the draft, and really run through all of them to let you know what they do well, what they don't do well, his thoughts on what they were going to be for this first season. And, you know, with some of that, it got us thinking a little bit about, you know, is it still Mr. Mankato, or is it Mr., you know, TCO performant? We'll call it Mr. We'll go with Mr. Mankato still. But yeah, we have some people in. We got some rookies coming in here, and we still got to pick Mr. Mankato. We got to get these things on the record. We got to get them done before, you know, things really get going and all the hype really starts off. So JR, this actually was someone I don't think you covered on the other podcast there on Locked On Vikings. But who is your pick for Mr. Mankato and why?
I actually switched my pick. Originally, I was going to go with Mike Boone, but I'm going to stay at the position. I'm going to go with Rock Thomas. I know he's been a little bit banged up, especially during the mini camps, but I think Rock Thomas is going to win that third running back spot. Now he's competing with Mike Boone and Mac Brown right now. But I think once we get to the preseason and he starts getting in games, if he's healthy enough to get in games, I believe he is healthy at this point. But if he's healthy enough to get in those games, I think he's going to really shine, because he's a guy I actually liked during the pre-draft process. And I thought he would get drafted, but somehow he ended up not getting drafted. Story is pretty cool. Started off as a 5-star recruit at Auburn, got lost in the shuffle there, ended up going to Jacksonville State, ended up shining there, winning Conference Player of the Year and putting up just ridiculous numbers while he was there. But what you saw on film is a guy that's very smooth, and he fits exactly what John DeFilippo wants to run with his mixture of some power schemes and some zone schemes as well. So I'm really looking forward to see how he plays in preseason. I think he's going to be a guy that shines and Egan as well.
Okay. All right. And it's a, how can you not cheer for a guy named Rock Thompson? I mean, that's a pretty cool name to go for there. So Miles, I'm happy you put this person on the list. Who's your pick?
I'm going with Corey Robertson, wide receiver out of Southern Miss. I think he's the kind of guy that has the opportunity to make the team. I think he, if not make the team, at least be on the practice squad. I think his skill set's pretty unique for what the team's looking for. I think he does a lot of the things that, at least coming out of college, that you know that were strengths of Laquon Treadwell's, and I see a little bit of that. I see a bit more burst from him than I did Treadwell coming out too. He obviously wasn't injured coming out of college the way Treadwell was, but he's a big body guy. He's physically plays the ball. He's aggressive towards the ball. He's aggressive, you know, out of in and out of breaks, you know, when DBs try to jam him. So I like that. I like the physicality. So I think he's going to come in and kind of show that, you know, he could play, and he probably should have been drafted. So I think he's my pick for Mr. Mankato, and I think he's gonna do well.
So tell me a little bit about him versus Brandon Zylstra. Zylstra's getting all the hype right now.
Yeah.
All the hype, you know, the hands coming out of the CFL, et cetera. What is it that you like about Robertson over Brandon Zylstra?
I guess I didn't pick Zylstra. I don't like to make the trendy picks, I guess, too. I think Zylstra's a pretty – like last year, I think guys like Rodney Adams and Stacey Coley were top picks for Mr. Mankato, just because, you know, they're drafted, they're easy names to know of, and I'm not really a big fan of doing that. But I think in this scenario, like I said, I wasn't going to take the trendy pick, but I also think he has a leg up on a guy like Robertson too, just for the fact that he played pro ball, whether it's the CFL or not. Like, the CFL is still a respected league, so I think I think that's where my difference is the fact that he's played in the NFL before, even if it was in the CFL. I think he's got all that experience. He's it's not quite as new to him. The speed's obviously a little bit newer to him, but like the, you know, in terms of being a pro athlete, I think there's a little bit more of that maturity there. So that's probably why I didn't take him, but it wouldn't surprise me if he won it either.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And last but certainly not least, Saxy Prince, who are you going with?
I'm going to go with Holton Hill. I think obviously once they were doing some of the offseason programs, he was definitely a name that stood out quite a bit. I think this is definitely the time I want to see us start developing some of our younger cornerback talent, so we can have, honestly, one of like the best secondaries in the league for a while. I mean, you have Holton Hill, you have Mac Alexander, you know, Trey Waynes is still young. I mean, he may not be what we thought he was going to be, but with him and, you know, Holton Hill, Mike Hughes now, you have a really good, young, talented secondary who really can just grow together. And obviously they can, you know, kind of learn how to play interchangeably. So, you know, if a guy like Xavier Rhodes goes down for a game or two, you know, you have another guy who can step into his position. So Holton Hill is my guy because I kind of want him to be, you know, that's the fifth or sixth corner on the roster, and really kind of solidify what the secondary is going to be for the next foreseeable future, in my opinion. I know you can't pay all those guys, but.
Question.
Yeah.
Can we change Mr. Mankato to Mr. TCO? And yes, I did coin that. Can we call it Mr. TCO instead? Mr. Mankato is just, is, you know.
I mean, we can. We can do whatever we want to.
Jason is the chairman, so he can make.
I mean, we can do whatever we want to. I just not know that.
You heard it here first. That's all I'm saying.
ESPN 1500. I mean, they're doing their Mr. Mankato odds and all that stuff. I mean, but yeah, we can do what we want. So
I'll talk to caller.
Like, all right, so it's fine. And for us, Mr. TCO. For everyone else, give me Mr. Mankato.
Jason's got to give his pick
because Miles said so, and that's the bottom line. Oh, for Mr. TCO.
Yeah,
Mr. TCO.
All right. I'm going with he's not gonna win, but I'm going with Ade Aruna, just cause
nice job, boy.
Yeah, you know, we're bringing some more of Yankees people onto the squad. Nice athletic profile there. I think he's someone that there's still some questions for us at that at the defensive end spot. I know that, you know, Tashaun Bauer is still a popular name, but you know, he just doesn't do it for me. So I'm hoping that one of these younger guys we brought in with the sparked up profile will be able to come in there and do a little something. So I'm going with Ade Aruna as my, I don't know if it'd be Mr. TCO pick, but as my surprise pick of the late round picks to make the team. Cause defensive ends don't win Mr. Mankato. I mean, that just doesn't happen all that often. So yeah, that's me. That's my pick. And, I kind of brought it up before we get to the next thing. There was one thing, JR, that you brought up on your pod, Yinka. And I also, but Yinka got in trouble for it because that's just kind of how things go. So JR, you put Kirk Cousins down on, you know, that superlatives list that everyone's been doing now going into to training camp. You put Kirk Cousins down as your I guess your person to break out for the Vikings, or person who needs to break out, I think are the words that that you used on the podcast. Yinka, you put Kirk Cousins down as a player who needs to rebound, which people didn't like very much when you put that out there. I guess I'll start with you, JR. I guess could you give a little bit more insight in what you mean by, you know, Kirk Cousins needing to break out? Because I would think that he would have broken out already if they gave him all that guaranteed money.
Well, what I mean by that is I think they need him to perform at a higher level, higher level than what Case Keenum did a year ago in order to call this whole experiment successful. And I think with the whole Kirk Cousins idea is that they brought him in because they felt like he was an upgrade over Case Keenum. So he needs to break out for this team to be successful and go where they want him or where they want to go. So that's what I was meaning by breakout. I'm not necessarily saying that he's going to be a breakout candidate. It was more of a what he needs to do as opposed to what I think is going to happen. Now, I do think he's a guy that can break out, but I don't know if it's going to happen right away because there's so many moving parts early on in the season. You got a new offensive coordinator, and he doesn't even have that chemistry with Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins doesn't even have that chemistry with his center, Pat Elflein, right now, because we just don't know exactly how that's going to turn out. And then on top of that, they're trying to incorporate Dalvin Cook back into the offense as well. So there's a lot of moving parts, but I could see that I could see him start to take off, or even this offense take off around the fifth or sixth week of the year, and I could start to see them develop some chemistry to where he could break out. But if he's able to be more efficient in the red zone and improve upon or be more consistent in those clutch situations like we saw him against, I believe it was New Orleans and Seattle last year, if he's able to put all that together, I think he can be able to have a breakout season.
Okay, and then I guess on the flip side, and I guess it's a similar question. Prince, well, I guess what are you meaning when you say you need to see Kirk Cousins rebound because, you know, we just gave him a whole bunch of money?
Yeah, I'm not even going to touch that because I'm on my own business.
Okay, ignore the money. Explain what you mean by rebound.
As far as Kirk Cousins, obviously his 2016 is probably his best season in his career. This man put up a pretty ridiculous numbers, you know. But 2017 was a little bit of a regression for him. It wasn't completely his fault. Obviously, he had, some banged up offensive lines, banged up weapons. So not completely his fault, but, you know, they did give us a little bit of a glimpse into who Kirk Cousins could be on the back end or that lower half. That, you know, he might not be that kind of quarterback that if things start to go awry, let's say Adam Thielen is gone for, you know, a few games.
Saxy Prince.
Yes, yes, sir.
I need you to move back towards the router. I don't know where you are right now.
But I am literally standing right in front of the router, actually, because I knew there was going to be an issue. So.
Okay, there we go. There you go. You're back
is
now.
Is it better?
A little bit.
Okay, so basically what I was saying is 2016 was Kirk Cousins' best season. You regressed a little bit in 2017. A lot of his weapons and just like surrounding cast around him in the previous season, so you did get to see a little bit of that regression, which shows us a little bit of who Kirk Cousins is obviously when he doesn't have the perfect surrounding, things tend to fall apart. Granted, he's coming into that the number one defense last year, had arguably the best wide receiver core. You know, not as great of offensive line, but maybe still figuring it out. So I want him to bounce back, not because he's been he obviously is his first year with the Vikings, you know, what he was probably in 2016, which I think is the kind of quarterback that could bring us a lot closer to that, you know, that. That was my thing when I said bounce back, because I really didn't see, you know, I mean, he's the most important on the team. So having him not play on is not going to help us where we want to be at, obviously, come January, February.
Okay.
I do want to see him bounce back to that 2016 play.
Okay, so I feel like I got where you're coming from there, and that, you know, he did have a bit of a down year, but circumstances, I mean, it was very much about, you know, his offensive line falling apart in front of him there. And so what you're really looking to see is that guy that you saw in 2015, 2016, putting up big numbers when he did have, you know, his full complement of weapons, good protection, and, you know, balling out, playing more consistent. You're basically looking to see that guy show up for a full season in crunch time, bouncing back from what, you know, what most would agree was a bit of a down year from him in the last season. And I think that's fair.
Some won't agree with that. Some don't agree.
Oh, well, most will. So we'll take that, and we won't go back to a couple months and relitigate and all that stuff. We'll say last year was a bit of a down season. The previous two were better. We're hoping that next season and really the next three are more like his first two seasons as a starter as opposed to his last one. And we will keep that moving along. Hold on. Actually, Miles, I had one that I wanted to ask you here because you put Jalen Holmes as your under the radar kind of person in your superlatives list, but he didn't make it into your Mr. TCO.
Does he count? He's a fourth round pick. Does he count?
I mean, I feel like, you know, sure. Sure. Nah, why not? Why not?
He just doesn't count in my book.
You know, no one after the eligible for Mr. Mankato.
I have no idea what you just said. None whatsoever. None whatsoever.
Hey, this is where we should cue the Jason, this is where you cue the dialogue.
Oh no, you already know. You already know. I have no idea what Prince said, but I feel like he was agreeing with you, Miles, saying that maybe he was drafted too early.
Yeah, I mean, and they literally were about to take
him. Anyone after the third round,
okay,
is eligible.
Okay, he's eligible then. He's eligible. He's
not eligible in my book. For me personally, I'm not taking him as a Mr. TCO. We're not calling him Mr. Mankato. Come on now, chill.
You better talk to QB1 there. You know.
QB1. Anyways, though. Look, no, I think he's under the radar for the fact that I think he's going to contribute this year in sub packages. I think it'd be fantastic if he could get on the field and help solidify, you know, that rotation that I know that Zim's looking for, and you know, guys behind Sheldon Richardson and Linval Joseph. You know, you got a guy like Jaleel Johnson who I think is going to be that third defensive tackle, but that still leaves room and opportunity for a fourth guy, because you saw last year we had four guys rotate in. For the most part, you know, using guys like Brian Robinson and part of that rotation too. But, yeah, I think if Jalen Holmes can kind of solidify himself, I think he could find himself in like sub packages. You know, let's say you bring Anthony Barr down to defensive end, you put Sheldon Richardson down, you know, inside, you know, a tackle. Then you bring a guy like Jalen Holmes in, and have a guy like Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin. You can or put Everson Griffin down at a tackle position. Jalen Holmes or Sheldon Richardson, you know, give a guy like Sheldon Richardson a break. You got Jalen Holmes in there. You got, and then Danielle Hunter. I think that could be pretty deadly.
I like it. I like it. I like it. I like it. All right. Well, let's get back on track here. I know it took us down a road that was off the path that we had initially mapped out for ourselves here. And we're going to start off. We're going to let JR actually explain this one for us a little bit here, because we're going through Jenga pieces. JR, what you mean? What are these Jenga pieces for offense and defense that we're looking at here? What does this mean?
Yeah, so this is just an idea that I took away from Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. I want to make sure I give them credit because they were the ones that originally came up with the idea, and I wanted to bring this discussion back to you guys. So basically, all the Jenga pieces are talking about is if you take one player away from a certain side of the ball, would it cause that whole entire unit to just fall apart? So I think this is going to be a real interesting discussion. I'm really interested to see you guys' answers as well.
All right, well, start us off then. Who are your Jenga pieces?
So on offense, mine was Riley Reiff. I think if you take him away from that left tackle spot, I think it just sends the entire offense into a flux because they really don't have another guy that can consistently play that left tackle spot. Yes, you can say they can slide Mike Remmers over to that spot, but when he did play that spot with the Carolina Panthers, he was a disaster. And they really don't have another guy that can shift over to that left tackle spot. So if Reiff was to go down, I think this offense would be in huge jeopardy of just dwindling. Now, on defense, I went with Linval Joseph because I think everything starts with him because he takes so much attention away from everybody else, not just on the defensive line, but him being able to be such – a force as a run defender and sometimes as a pass rusher as well. I think he helps everybody from not only the first level, but the second and third level of the defense as well.
All right. That makes sense. Miles, who are you going with?
Yeah, I think I kind of tried to avoid the quarterback position here just because I do think, you know, all hell would break loose if Kirk Cousins got hurt just because yes, I know last year was kind of an anomaly. Do I think Trevor Siemian is Case Keenum reincarnated? No. I think he could be a serviceable guy if you needed him to be, but I think, you know, I think everything would fall apart. But so I didn't include him in my scenario for that reason. I'm going with Riley Reiff on offense, you know, for all the reasons JR pointed out. I just think, you could move Rashad Hill over there, but it just wouldn't be good news if he went down on offense, and I think it'd just be a trickle down effect from there. And then on defense, I said Harrison Smith. I think Linval Joseph is another one, a really good point too. But I think adding a guy like Sheldon Richardson in is going to help Linval Joseph a little bit more and take a little bit of that pressure off of him. But I'll go back to why I picked Harrison Smith. I just don't think there is not a guy that can come in and replace what he can do. I think another guy, Xavier Rhodes, is obviously another one that you could have picked here too. But I think Harrison Smith, just everything he does on the defense, I just think he's the single most important player on that defense for everything he does. I think the way he communicates, just the playmaking ability, his leadership, everything he does, I just don't think it's replaceable. And I just think everything would, in a similar way to Riley Reiff, would just kind of go downhill.
That's like fair. I guess if Smith did, what was to miss time? Because you mentioned, you know, we have Richardson in the fold now, and so maybe that would lessen the impact of something happening to Linval. I guess what would be your ideal safety configuration if something did happen to Harrison Smith?
You'd probably move Anderson Dejo over to Harrison Smith's role, and then for me, just right now, what we've seen, I think Anthony Harris would have to play that other spot, just because I think he's shown that he could play and you know, even in sub-pack, you know, as a part-time player, I think he's shown that he's flashed some playmaking ability, even as a rookie. So I think that'd be the best case scenario. It's not a good scenario, but it'd be the best case scenario.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And again, you know, definitely not least, your last this time, but not least, Saxy Prince. Who are you rolling with?
Defensively, I'm with Miles. I think Harrison Smith allows us to do a lot of the things that we kind of find fun with Zimmer's defense. I know Anthony Barr is another kind of toy, but I love what Zimmer does, as how he employs Harrison Smith. You can obviously
Anthony Barr.
Nah. But Harrison Smith is that guy that he's just such a core of the defense. He's the core of the defense. He's like the most, I think, one the most versatile player on the defense. So you can use him in a lot of different situations and whatnot, and doesn't have really that many weaknesses, which is just important. On the offensive side of the ball, I think I'm going to be a little bit biased here. I'm going to say Stephon Diggs. I think people don't really truly understand what he's asked to do week in and week out. I think he's asked to go against a lot of teams' number one corners. I think he's arguably asked to do a lot more complex things within the offensive scheme. At least we've seen it as last year. And I think if you take that away, trying to slide someone else into his role specifically, I don't think it'd be an easy task. Which would probably change the identity of the offense a little bit more so. I wouldn't be surprised if taking away Stephon Diggs makes us rely less on the pass and, you know, more so on, you know, other areas like, you know, running game, running through Dalvin Cook, maybe getting Kyle Rudolph more involved and stuff. My offensive guys, yeah.
So how, in terms of like it, Diggs is your Jenga piece here on offense, I'm a huge Stephon Diggs fan, so this is no slight against him. But are you basically saying like long term, like if he was out long term? Because we've seen him miss short term, and the Vikings have been not saying they've been fine, but like that from the most part, it hasn't hurt them too much for the fact that, you know, because it was short periods of time.
I think I'm more talking long term because, yeah, we have seen the spurts where Adam Thielen can, you know, to really take on the lion's share of the dig targets when he's gone. But I don't think that's sustainable. I think when Adam Thielen has to go against consistently week in, week out, team's number one corner, We might not see the same Adam Thielen that we see week in, week out. I think he still obviously might win some of those matchups, but we don't get to see the same explosion that we would see when he's going against number two corners, when he gets to move into the slot, when he has those mismatches. Long term, I think that would shift the way the offense would run. And I think the reason why the offense is can be so explosive is because of those two together. But more importantly, I think Diggs can beat any team's number one corner. So I think the offense would regress without him there.
Okay. All right. Prince, this next topic is all for you. All for you. It's something I know you've been waiting to talk about. Waiting for us to have a pod so you can come in here and talk about.
Is it what are we going to do at quarterback?
Bruh. Oh. No, it's not that. But, you know, if something does happen to Kirk Cousins, we can always trade for Teddy Bridgewater because, you know, the Jets put him on the market, you know, so that's out there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, probably get him for a pretty good deal, too. Pretty good deal. But speaking of, I guess, no, it'd be the opposite of that. Definitely not a good deal. Running backs are getting paid a bunch of money, Prince. How do you feel about it?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. It feels good. It feels good all over again. I think that you can't even call them running backs anymore. You have to call them offensive weapons because that's how they're getting treated. Guys like Lev Bell, you know, he's holding out for more money. Todd Gurley just got paid. I mean, I think teams are, because they are not just relying on these guys to just pound the ball 30 times a game. I think they're learning how to employ them a little bit more uniquely and creatively within their offense, which kind of forces, you know, teams to be a little bit more having to be flexible as far as what they want to pay these guys. So, no, I'm a huge proponent of it. I think if a guy is able to contribute that much into your offense, I think you should be able to pay him regardless of what he makes or regardless what position he plays. As long as he can contribute. And guys like Todd Gurley, guys like Lev Bell, David Johnson, you know, probably Dalvin Cook here in a couple of years. Pay them. Pay them all the coins. I don't care.
All right. Well, we let Yankee go first. Miles, could you tell him why he's wrong, please? I mean, I'm sorry, Miles. What are your thoughts on this new market?
Oh, Lord.
And paying running backs like their wide receivers?
Yeah, hard pass. Hard pass. I'd rather spread that the price point out to three different running backs than one. Because what happens when that one player, or if that one player gets hurt, all that money, and then who replaces him? You have cheap, really cheap players, which, you know, I don't think the drop off is all that great from a lot of guys to their backups at the running back position. So that's the tough part.
Oh, you're talking about running backs. I thought you were talking about quarterbacks for a minute there, but you go ahead. Keep going.
So I guess, Yinka, because this is one of those things, I mean, we talk about a lot, but I guess from your perspective, if you had a team, because I know that you're Mr. Pay the Running Backs, would you rather have Le'Veon Bell or what the Pats had last season with Deion Lewis, yo, James White,
Rex Burkhead?
Like, which one of those?
And Mike Gillisley.
Like, if you're running a team, which one of those two things would you look at and be like, this is a better thing for me as the person running the team? Because I know the player to get paid. But if you're, like, running a team, which strategy would you prefer to employ if you were running the team?
Yeah, I said this on a pod, like, months ago. But, you know, obviously the best thing that you can have is a running back by committee that you can spread off, like, obviously the amount of damage that one guy would take, that pounding that he would take, you could spread it over multiple guys. But here's what I'm thinking as well too. Obviously, as we can see, the Patriots have a fantastic running back by committee, but not every team has a great running back by committee. There's some teams who have awful running back by committees, and in those circumstances, that's where I'm Ravens.
What?
They don't have
Alex Collins was really good last year.
Yeah, Alex Collins balled out last year.
Yeah, but that's one guy. I'm like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, there are times where I would rather take the...
But they paid nothing for Alex Collins. Like, he's making nothing.
But that's what I'm saying is, like, I would much in those circumstances where the running back by committee isn't really a running back committee, it's like one guy that's doing really well and you have other guys that's playing dirt cheap. I'd rather have the better player who's going to be able to contribute more. But in the circumstances of, could I have, you know, two or three really good guys, like let's say Atlanta, for instance, like I would much rather have that. Cause yeah, you can spread the pounding, you can spread, like you can do a lot of different creative things with a lot of different players. So I'm more on the side of like, I'd much rather have a better player like Todd Gurley, if I can, over a not as good running back by committee, but running back by committee would trump having that one good player.
I'd rather just have the good offensive line, because as talented as Todd Gurley is,
that's not what you asked, though.
I'm just saying. Until they, no, but this thing, I think that's part of the thing that gets kind of caught up in these conversations. And I know that, you know, some people, you know, took issue with one of the things I was saying about, you know, preferring to pay the offensive line or something like that. It's not saying that like a Todd Gurley isn't an immensely talented athlete, but I mean, Todd Gurley wasn't doing Todd Gurley things until they went out and upgraded their offensive line, which it's really his, goes it, back it, to it's show. The position just isn't as value because of how interdependent it is on everything else going on around them, being in a good offense, having decent quarterback play, having good, you know, blocking. And given that we know that there's a greater correlation to the skill of the offensive line for running success than there is to the talent of the running back, give me the offensive line and a late round pick and let's get this thing, you know, like, and this,
but
as terrible as this to say, I mean, football's a blood sport. We'll, you know, get a couple mid round picks, some late round, you know, athletes in there, hit on one of them, grind them down and get another one. Like,
I don't disagree with that notion, Jason. It's just that obviously we've seen, you know, even, let's look at the Vikings, for instance. You know, they have tried to assemble what they can as far as offensive line, trying to go pay guys out on the street, whatever the case is. But
AOL did not want Prince to get that point about these running backs out. They said no. Yeah. And so with, you know, JR having to step away, you and I being on the same page, and AOL being on the side with us, I feel like that's a clean sweep. We got that one, Miles. We win. Yep.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. No, don't pay the running backs.
Any running back conversation, we're always going to win it.
Yeah, we win. And AOL sided with us. So sorry,
all
Prince.
I was.
All no, I was, no, it's done. We declared ourselves.
All I was saying. Stop. All I was saying was.
Todd Gurley's better than Alex Collins. I get it.
No, all I was saying was, as we've been able to tell, even with the Vikings and stuff, you know, you do have this like fluctuation of like you have really good offensive linemen that are, you know, all available at certain time in free agency and obviously during the draft. And then you have other instances where, you know, the well is very, very dry as far as going out and to go get those guys. And sometimes those are the same times where you can pay a running back at that time. So it's I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that, you know, you have to decisions at certain times. And I think that's kind of what happened with the Vikings right now. They have gone out to go get some offensive linemen that they feel it can contribute, but they still don't quite have, you know, the pieces to be kind of a top contending offensive line in the league.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, we still win this argument because, you know, both of us are against you and your internet was also against you and you were making your points. So we're fair. Yeah, we're taking this one. We're taking this one. All right. This is another, you know, it's another good conversation because, you know, the Rams, Todd Gurley, you know, went out there and they paid your man all that money, you know, resetting the running back market, making Yinka happy. But yeah, we got Aaron Donald, who is widely considered to be possibly the best player in football for the past couple of seasons. They have not given that man his money, but they just gave a running back, like, you know, what is it, average $13 million a year or something like that over the next five seasons or six 15. Seasons. I thought just the new money was 15, but when you took the whole thing, it was
Sure overall it's 13.
Yeah. But Prince, I guess if you're now the Rams and you're looking at this, now I could understand, you know, if you're looking at the math, maybe saying that wide receiver is more important to the success of your offense than defensive tackle. So pay Brandon Cooks, maybe. But pay Todd Gurley over Aaron Donald? Help me understand. Like, what should the Rams be doing with Aaron Donald? How much money should they be paying that man? Like, what's the best defensive tackle in the game worth to you? And should they have paid him before they paid either of those other guys?
Here's what I'll say first. Pay Aaron Donald whatever he wants because he's the best player in arguably in the National Football League. However, I think the issue with right now is they kind of understand that they have a really, really young quarterback. And as far as Aaron Donald, yes, he can help the defense. He can continue to make that defense be competitive, be one of the top defenses in the league. But they're also probably trying to think about what's going to help my young quarterback right now. And the fact that Brandon Cooks is an offensive threat or a deep threat, as well as, you know, Todd Gurley being able to really just take kind of that pressure off of Jared Goff. I think that was their mentality going into it. I kind of disagree. I actually would have paid Aaron Donald before I even paid Brandon Cooks, just because I think he's that fan great of a player. But, you know, I think they decided to, like, hey, well, what's more important to helping our quarterback at this time was probably paying those two guys. I disagree, but, you know, they decided, like, hey, we're going to help out Jared Goff.
Okay, all right. Miles, what are your thoughts on this whole thing? Like, Aaron Donald, I guess, has already come out. They're saying that he is not going to play another snap on the contract that he's currently on. I guess, what are your thoughts on how the Rams have handled all this, paying the new guy in Brandon Cooks and then paying the running back before paying arguably the best player in football?
Well, I would guess Aaron Donald's looking for, I won't say Matt Ryan money, but he's looking for, you know, top-tier quarterback money. So I'm sure the negotiations have been pretty tough, because I feel like there's no way they wouldn't have already had him signed if the money was close. And the money's definitely not close if they're willing to extend guys like Cooks and Gurley before Aaron Donald, who is arguably their most important player outside of, no, who is their most important player. So, yeah, it's a tough situation. I know that they do have a lot of – they still, even, you know, after the Cooks and Gurley deals, they still have quite a bit of money heading into the 2019 and 2020, 2021 seasons as of right now, you know, before they would have to pay a guy like Jared Goff. So with that money, it's really a tough situation, though, because it's not just Aaron Donald that needed to get paid. Obviously, Brandon Cooks and Todd Gurley got taken care of, and they're in that mix. But they'll have guys like Marcus Peters. They have LaMarcus Joyner. Who's their offensive lineman? Rob Havenstein, I think that's his name. So they have a few guys that really do need to get paid, and Jared Goff, obviously, in the next, what, they have three more years with him, so that helps that. But so they do have some of that flexibility, and I do think they'll eventually get a deal done, or they might just franchise tag Aaron Donald after the season if that's what they have to do, because they want to make sure that they keep him. I could kind of see it being a little Le'Veon Bell situation where the money's not adding up, but they want to keep him, so they're going to make sure that they do by franchise tagging him and not let him walk. So it is a tough situation, because I know right now they have like $2 million in cap space. So they wouldn't really be able to take on any money this year for an Aaron Donald contract. So I'd be curious to see what that like signing bonus would be, unless that, I guess you can spread out signing bonuses, so it wouldn't really matter that much. But I would guess that guaranteed money has got to be in the $80 million range, right? Like, it's got to be a quarterback type money that Aaron Donald's asking for. So it's a crazy amount of money. So I'm sure it's really tough to kind of negotiate that. But when you have a quarterback who's not making a lot of money, I can understand seeing the side for paying a guy like Aaron Donald, especially for that reason. If it was between Jared Goff and Aaron Donald, it would be really hard to not pick Jared Goff because quarterback obviously is it's a really tough scenario all around. I'm not trying to argue that Jared Goff's better than Aaron Donald, just, you know, the positional value and all that, but it's tough just because I can just picture Aaron Donald wanting a crazy amount of money, which he well deserves, but it'd be hard to justify wanting to pay him that too at the same time.
All right.
Miles, I have a question for you then.
Oh boy.
Do you feel, this is a question I've kind of tried to ask myself about their situation. Do you feel as if the Rams could potentially find another quarterback that's just as good, or if not better, as Jared Goff, and pay a guy like Aaron Donald?
Wait, what do you mean?
I will answer for Miles and say yes.
And
absolutely.
And that's kind of my thinking as well too. Is
They won't.
Yeah. They probably won't. But I'm saying
replace Jared Goff like down the road.
Yeah. I think that they could legitimately find another quarterback who's better, if as good, if not better than Jared Goff, to be able to keep a guy like Aaron Donald.
Oh sure. For me, it's still too early for me to say definitely yes. But as of right now, I'd agree with Jason. Yes, right now. But I do think it's still too early because he'll be in his third season, so that's kind of the money season. I think he obviously made a huge jump, you know, with a guy like Sean McVay helping him out a lot. But yeah, we'll see. I'm still of the opponent, you know, the ideal is that it's 3 years at least for players, and you know, he progressed significantly in year two, so let's see what he does in year three before I even make a decision like that.
All right. Well, gentlemen, we made it. We almost made it all the way through with all of us, but you know, duty calls, JR had to step away. But before we get up out of here, wanted to plug a couple things that have come out recently, either on our side or by folks affiliated with us, i.e. JR. So if you haven't already, check the show notes. You can see our man, Sports Guy Rye. He's been going through the running back position for you, letting you know who you need to draft, and not just giving you some stock rankings, but really giving you some in-depth analysis on each of the players that he's put on there, on why you should pick them, why they are expected to perform how he thinks they will. And he's gone through 1 through 30, and I think next up will be the wide receiver position. So check that out. Check that out over at climbingthepocket.com. Obviously, we've talked about it a couple times. JR is now hosting the Locked On Vikings podcast. His first two episodes are up. Put the link to that also in the show notes. And in case you missed it, our man, Flip Mozzie, back, moved, settled in, 15 minutes with Flip. Great episode. You definitely should check that out as well. And last but certainly not least, want to thank our friends over at Vikings Territory, Purple PTSD. And if you're not doing it, make sure you have their podcast in the queue as well. And of course, you'd be remiss. We got to thank you guys, the listeners. Thanks for sticking with us through this entire episode. It's been a while. I know this is a long one. Thanks for sticking with us through this whole thing. Miles, Saxy Prince, it was a pleasure. Sure, we'll be doing this quite a bit more now that we actually have real football to talk about and we aren't just making stuff up to argue about. And my name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter @BrownJason. This was the Climbing the Pocket podcast. Y'all have a good one.